Good morning. Welcome to the March 20th, 2019 regular meeting of the Commission to End Homelessness. The agenda contains a brief description of each item to be considered. Except as provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on the agenda. The Commission encourages public participation. If you wish to speak on any item appearing on the agenda or during public comments, please complete a speaker request form and turn it in to the clerk prior to the reading of the item. Each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. With that, we will move to the agenda for the meeting today. Pledge of Allegiance. Chief Casella, can you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Please place your hands over your hearts. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chief Casella. Madam Clerk, please take roll at this time.
Please respond here when I read your name. Chair Andrew Doe.
Here.
Vice Chair Daniel Young.
Here.
Michelle Steele.
Here.
Ken Domer. Here. Sue Parks.
Here.
Tom Casella.
Here.
Randy Black.
Here.
Richard Afable.
Here.
Jim Palmer.
Here.
Jack Tuan. Don Barnes,
here.
Scott Larson, Marshall Moncrief.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Next item for us is item number four, to approve the minutes from our February 25th, 2019 special meeting. I entertain a motion if you don't have any questions. Any comments, any corrections or comments, questions? Okay, any opposition? Item passes, thank you. The next item in the agenda is for us, the board, the commission to discuss the creation of possibly subcommittees to do the work that we would like to pursue. But I think it would be meaningful for us to start with item number six first, the discussion item, to allow Ms. Susan Price a chance to present the system of care as it currently exists in the County of Orange. And then we'll go back to number five, if that's okay with the commission, that's what we will do. Yeah. But before we start, let me ask you this. When did the commissioners receive this, the material, the binder?
I just got it right here, right now. And okay. I received nothing electronically.
Something, but not the binder? Of all of that? Okay. 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 All right. Yeah, with I think for the challenge that some of us faced is that the file was too large and mm-hmm. didn't go through for some of us, and it's also so voluminous. I think it's kind of impractical to print this out. So in the future, can we arrange to have the hard copy delivered to the commissioners when it's this big, especially? Anything less than 50 pages, would you be fair? 50 pages about to cut off, but beyond that, I would say let's find a way to get it to the commissioners, like the hard copy.
Can I ask the clerk, was the agenda and the PowerPoint sent out separately, or was it sent out with the large attachment?
No, the email that was sent included both the agenda and the large attachment.
Okay. And we won't be sending large attachments like this to the commissioners in the future. This was kind of a one-time deal, and it was not expected that everyone would read these materials in anticipation of today's meeting. In the email that some of you got and some of you did not get, it said not to print the materials. The electronic version really has, it has a table of contents where you can click on it, takes you to the document. It's for your reference only. And it said in the email that we would be presenting to you the hard copy binder for reference in an ongoing manner, that you can use this binder to put additional materials as we proceed with the commission within this binder so that you have everything you need in one place. That was our intent, and lesson learned on a large attachment like that, not making it through everybody's email. It may be in your spam file, who knows, but lesson learned. Thank you.
Great.
And to note that the agenda materials are posted online, so perhaps if we have a large attachment, we can send an email with the link to the online posting of the large files.
Let me share with you my experience at Cal Optima. We have big binders all the time, right? At the county, it's in our building. I don't have a problem getting the hard copy. But from Cal Optima, whenever they send something that big through the email, it's impossible for me to read it and to access the material. So when it gets anything beyond, I would say, 50 to 100 pages, that's about the limit that I can print something out and be able to put it in a coherent way that would be presented, like with the tabs and such, okay? So when we get to that type of documents, please. Like, for instance, I've been out of the office since Friday. I don't have a binder. Maybe it's sitting in my office, but I haven't been in my office since Friday. I've been up in Sacramento. So that's the kind of situation that where we have to anticipate that everyone here is busy, and we have to get a way to get that copy to them. With that in mind, can I get my copy? Yeah, perfect. I didn't even know that was a binder. I thought I printed everything out that I could at home, but I thought that was it. Thank you. Okay. All right. So with that in mind, let's keep that in mind when we hand out or send out the agenda and any supporting documentation. Okay. Susan, go ahead.
Excuse me, Chair. Would you like me to read the title?
Please,
and we do
yes.
have one speaker request.
Okay, good. Let's read the item and then go ahead and call the speaker at that time.
Okay, so item 6, overview of the County of Orange system of care, including care coordination, health care, behavioral health, community corrections, housing, and public social services. And the speaker is Craig Durfee.
The Honorable Chair and the Homeless Committee, thank you for devoting your time to this. After I had attended a meeting here on February 25th that designated the veterans as part of the homeless population, and got thinking about my family who served your country. My father was in the Marines. My uncle was in the Vietnam War, lost his eye, and got a Purple Heart at 12 years old. I didn't understand. My cousin served in the Navy for 20 years. So I got thinking with the voice of OC in the register about the question about ACL issues there. I got thinking, what can I make it positive? So I started calling Congress, state legislators, county people, and I suggested that the Harbor Boulevard facility, which is state land since Reagan disembarked it for the development of disabled, it's been a city idle. In fact, the legislators are thinking about surplus property. So I got thinking, so I called the White House and they're willing to write a letter. You have American Warrior participating in an endurance, participating in the Trump executive order to empower veterans and prevent suicide. Would it be a great way to all our military to have a place to go and have training, like the American Garage with Richard Rawling, three-part series where they made it a warrior mechanic ADA compliant. He says we need more of it. In fact, the gentleman who started it 20 years before that in terms of just a nonprofit group, he wants to build another one. Would it be great if we had all the population according to the veterans in the Congress have identified them in California as a large population of veterans? And then the issue with our community has not embraced the veterans because they're not aware of it. There's no PR. So they think that they're just homeless. And I've seen in the history of the paper a ping pong effect. I'm putting it very diplomatically. I think this commission can do a lot to do a positive thing and work towards that goal, which is what the president wants and what the military want. And we need to train. According to Rich Rawlings, I heard it half my sleep. There are 700,000 veterans and 350,000 need vocational training. And come July 1st, federal County D. Perkins 5, there's federal funds for the homeless. But there you have to work with your school board. And I would encourage this board to have military representation on your board, because they're missing in that component. And I really feel that if you're going to salute the flag, let's salute it with them and carry the message to Sacramento, to governor, by executive order, make that soil, make them have a place. I was told by Congress that your federal standards for apartments is different from a regular renter, having cockroaches and mice and so forth, and Congressman is fighting that. I think we have a lot to do in terms of PR of our community about our veterans and where they are, so they understand when they come to do this project, that they understand they wouldn't have a flag and have a place to stay without those who served us. My family did for you. I ask this board.
Mr. Durfee, your time is up.
Take the next step.
Thank you. Susan does have a presentation to go through. And looking at the volume of material that we have, when you're done with your presentation on the state of our system of care, Susan, maybe that's the time for you to introduce the priorities, the proposed priorities that you would suggest for this commission to take up. And the reason I ask for that is, at least that would be the initial point for our discussion. The priorities as Susan has come up with. I've spoken with Susan last night. It's a good starting point, but I believe that once we get going with the discussion, that we will probably want to flesh it out a little bit more. But at least it's a good starting point, okay? It's certainly not set in stone. Again, this is something that I would love for all of us to delve in and give our input and come up with measurable, concrete, you know, deliverables that we can accomplish. That's our goal, right? And so we have to break it up into what is it that we have today, what is it that we can accomplish in a very short term, and then keep in mind some longer term goals that we may have. Because sometimes if we look too far out, we kind of miss what we can do today. Okay? So go ahead. Any comments before Susan starts? Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. After the discussion and the feedback that I received at our last commission meeting regarding the desire to see, to further define what is the system of care and to get some data points about what is happening in our community on the issue of homelessness, I've been working with the leadership within the CEO's office, as well as a meeting that I have every month, interdepartmental meeting with all of the department heads in the county, to talk about what is the system of care and to try to come up with kind of a intersection for where homelessness fits into that. And so what you have on your screen are the five components of the system of care: community corrections, public social services, behavioral health, healthcare, and housing. Notice that homelessness is not a component in the system of care. And the reason being for that, I mean, it's under housing, right? But it's actually, homelessness is under all five. Homelessness is a symptom of the system of care, and that if we were to address and really fully realize our goals and objectives in the system of care, homelessness would be reduced and ended. And so with the discussion that we had in February about our commission's goal or name, the commission to end homelessness, what are the specific things that we need to do to end homelessness in our community? And I said this on my very first day when I came to the County of Orange. The two things that end homelessness are housing and income. As complex an issue as homelessness is, housing and income are at the foundation of everything that we deal with, everything that we talk about. And so with that, I'm going to go ahead through the slides. And the slides reference the binder a little bit. So you know, we can go through that however the commission wants to in the future. But the binder is separated into seven sections. And for those of you in the audience that don't have a binder in front of you, these materials are all online. And we will consolidate them into one place so that people can click on them and access the materials readily. Most of these materials are already publicly available. They're just in multiple places. So we wanted to create a reference binder for you after the feedback from the last meeting. So with that, I'm going to dive in on a fairly quick, I don't want to do a long presentation. I really am looking forward to the dialogue that we're going to have today regarding these components. This infographic was created by my office to show the multitude of touch points that we have in our county on the issue of homelessness. And it's a little bit small on the slide, but it really kind of references also from the binder. And these are the commissions. There are 17 commissions in the County of Orange that are intersecting with homelessness in one way, shape, or form. The care coordination department is kind of working on homelessness across multiple departments. We have commissions on seniors and veterans. We have children and families commission. For healthcare, we have the CalOptima healthcare plan in the county. The behavioral health, as many of you know, we've talked about the mental health system. There is a mental health board that oversees the Mental Health Services Act. There's an alcohol and drug advisory board. Community corrections, there's a bunch of different groups that are addressing both adult and juvenile correctional and criminal justice systems. And then affordable housing, the board on Tuesday just passed the Housing Trust Fund, and that will have a governance body of its own and be a JPA between the county and the cities. And then we also have the Housing and Community Development. The orange boxes on this chart really are referencing to you the discussion we had at the last meeting about what are the strategic plans that we have. And in the county, we have multiple documents that are dealing with different sectors of our system of care. We have the housing funding strategy. We have the Stepping Up initiative. You see reports regularly from the Children and Families Commission on community indicators, conditions of children. These are all documents, I think, that are familiar to most of you, as well as in my office, the assessment on homeless services and the update that we did to the board back in April of 2018. So in the section of our binder on healthcare, and I want to thank the Hospital Association who provided data in my early assessment, but also provided an update to that data, which is in your binder, and it is section 3A, homeless patient hospital data. And you can see from the slide, close to 13,000 homeless patient encounters in 2017, with mental health categories accounting for 32% of the patient visits to our hospitals. The whole person care pilot, which I believe is in year three, and we have our healthcare agency here today if there are any specific questions, but the whole person care pilot is really an amazing program that is addressing high utilizers of the emergency room system. We have five hospitals in the county that are directing our homeless high utilizers of the ER into safety net resources. We're very happy to have that program, and we hope in the governor's budget that they will include some housing funding to the back end of that program to enhance our success with the services that are provided there. And there, you also have a document, section 3B, which is the EMS calls for service to the courtyard, just to give you an idea of the calls for service at the courtyard have gone down, but we want to know specifically, why have they gone down, and how can we continue to bring that number down into the future, whether it's through a targeting of our efforts, whether it's through the whole person care efforts. We want to make sure that that number is trending downward because of an intentional intervention. Also on healthcare, the CHAD-H program, that's our public health department in the healthcare agency. They are out there really performing what looks like street outreach, but is actually connecting homeless people to a healthcare home. So important because our population of homeless that are disabled frequently are not receiving income for their disability. And so GR is not a sustainable source of income, and it's not something that you can get throughout the year. It's $350 for an individual person, not something that would be sustainable. And so looking at how we can connect people from GR to the disability that they're eligible for, they have to have medical records. The homeless healthcare delivery, this is a recent initiative you may have read about in the paper, and certainly our chair, Supervisor Doe, is well aware of the Cal Optima work on, you know, homeless street medicine, a homeless response, which will, I think that's down below here. The Cal Optima membership, nearly 800,000 people in our county are on Cal Optima. That's 25% of our county's population. And with our homeless population with significant health care issues, Cal Optima plays a key role in our solutions efforts. Behavioral health, I'm going to kind of skim through this because we talk about it so much. But the Mental Health Services Act, there's a three-year plan that the board approves regularly. The outreach and engagement, people call them the blue shirts. Those of you that are representing cities around the table or law enforcement, you know the blue shirts are in your city regularly. We also have our CAT teams, all the people that are coming out there to address the psychiatric emergencies on the streets, as well as doing ride-alongs with our law enforcement throughout the county. Those programs have grown in the last few years, and it's probably the number one request we get from cities is to expand that effort. The crisis stabilization unit effort, the board approved $24 million for that probably 2.5 years ago. We've had difficulty siting those, but we do have an expansion coming to Costa Mesa with an additional 12 beds. The Anita Drive public-private partnership with BeWell and Cal Optima is in the works now. We anticipate that to be a best practice going forward, and would love to replicate that. It hasn't even opened yet, but we'd still like to replicate it. And what's not on the slide I want to call out is the CHOC CEU at the CHOC Hospital for Juveniles. It didn't make the slide, but it's a really important component of our system of care. And in your binder, and I won't go over this now, but in your binder, under Section 4 Behavioral Health, you have an inventory of the healthcare agency's programs that are specifically addressing homelessness. There was a document that Supervisor Doe requested probably 3 years ago on all of the healthcare agency's programs, and it was a chart that was, I don't know, over 200 programs. Very, very lengthy document. What you have in here is just those programs that are intersecting with homelessness or directly specifically targeting eligibility for homeless populations. Community corrections, it occurred to me that probably many of you have not seen the Stepping Up initiative. That document was approved by the board, I don't have the date in front of me, but probably about 8 months ago. Sheriff, do you know, like, when was that brought to the board, Stepping Up? January 18th? Okay. Yeah. It's been a while. Okay. The Stepping Up initiative has 10 objectives in it. We had 10 subcommittees. We met for 19 months. Hundreds of people, probably 125, 130 people, met to discuss the correctional system on the interplay of mental health in the jails specifically, recidivism, reentry, and all of those components. That full report is in your binder. It's a great document to take a look at the intercept model of how a person kind of goes through the correctional system. And, you know, this impacts obviously from the streets to the jails to the reentry program. And we did, the county did apply for a Prop 47 grant and received that and opened a 24/7 reentry center in the city of Santa Ana. So that's really helped us out in building out our system of care. Lots of discussion around homeless deaths. The number was, I think it was 234 or 240 in 2018. You have that report. The sheriff put out a really good report demonstrating kind of the causes of death. and certainly a lot of that substance abuse related. That is Section 5C in the binder. Under housing, the board has approved the housing funding strategy. I'm happy to report we have over 1,000 units in the pipeline currently. The Orange County Housing Finance Trust, as I mentioned, was approved on Tuesday last week. In the housing programs, we were doing an assessment. Let me just look at this really quickly. Section 6D. Is the housing inventory chart. I'll tell you what that is really quickly. The housing inventory chart is what the Continuum of Care submits to HUD every year, and it's all of the inventory of emergency shelter beds, transitional shelter beds, rapid rehousing programs, and permanent housing programs. You may look at that list and say, something I am aware of is not on that list, and the reason why is because it's not a homeless designated program. If it's a rehab program for substance abuse, you don't have to be homeless to go there. You just have to have a substance abuse issue. So those wouldn't be represented in this document. This document is for eligibility into these programs. You have to be homeless to be in them. And so happy to share that with all of you. We put it in a way that is a little bit more easier to read and understand than what we actually submit to HUD, which is a little bit more complicated to read. Wanted to mention on the performance of the Continuum of Care, many of you have heard me say this before, the Continuum has housed about 2,200 people a year, each of 2 years. So it's kind of consistently, that's been the number. And that's somewhere between 40 and 45% of the need. So we talk about housing and the Housing Trust Fund, it's the solution to homelessness. The system of care is really been able to respond 46% of the time. And so there's a whole lot of need in how, with the shelter system being built up around the county and emergency shelter components, how we exit folks to the appropriate resource on the back end. And our retention rate on permanent housing is 99%. Quick shout out to public social services. This is our fifth component in the system of care. And, you know, quite frankly, they're everywhere we are. You know, the MERV, the mobile vehicle has been out, started out in the Civic Center. It's been out on the flood control channel. It currently goes to the Kramer Center, the Family Assistance Ministries down in San Clemente. They're everywhere trying to connect people to Medi-Cal, connect them to benefits that they're eligible for. And they also have an SSI outreach program to try to, as I mentioned earlier, get people from GR to the disability they're eligible for. And the key on that is to have a medical documented history of disability so that that process moves quickly. And then the CalWORKS programs, obviously we have a number of families that are on CalWORKS. We have the temporary homeless assistance, permanent homeless assistance, and it's 15 family resource centers throughout the county that we try to tie into the family system of care. We talk about prevention, and many of us have talked about, well, what does prevention look like? SSA does a lot of prevention on high-risk, at-risk families prior to entering the system of care, and they do that through the family resource centers. And I talked about the mobile resources. They're at the courtyard, obviously. I didn't mention that, but they are. And then calendar year 2018, their total applications. They have a fairly high volume of people coming through either seeking to connect to benefits and also to reconnect to benefits. You know, if they go through the correctional system, they'll have their benefits, you know, disjointed and they'll have to go back and reapply. And so we're doing a lot of work to try to create a seamless approach for how people move through the system. And this, I believe, is our last slide on the main system gaps identified. And these are things that many of us are aware of. On the healthcare stabilization for the most vulnerable, disabled, elderly, homeless populations that are served in the shelter system, you know, our shelter providers are challenged with the level of need on the healthcare side for some of the populations that we serve. Residential mental health and substance abuse treatment. we need more residential-type programs to address the needs of the homeless population. The outpatient programs are a little bit less successful. They have a harder time engaging in the outpatient processes. For the correction side, reentry in connection to the mental health treatment, that's really been our ongoing discussion in the Stepping Up initiative, is how do we create a seamless system where people are not losing their prescriptions and their medications between being in jail and then coming back out and not having access to what they need, and then, you know, going back out and self-medicating within that window. Mr. Casella is shaking his head affirmatively, because this is one of the main issues that leads to a lack of success on reentry. Certainly, we need, we have a lot of shelter beds coming online, which, you know, for some degree, that's great in addressing the front-end crisis. It concerns me a bit, because on the back end, we've got to create exit strategies for the number of beds that we currently have, as well as those that are coming online. And so the length of stay in shelters is going to be something that I will be tracking very heavily to make sure that we are exiting people to the most appropriate level of care. But we do not have enough shelter beds in the south part of the county. In the south service planning area, we have 45 beds at the ASL, alternate sleeping location, it's called, operated by the Friendship Shelter in Laguna Beach. And the rest of it is mostly scattered site, rapid rehousing programs, and things of that nature. And then disability benefits, outreach, access, and advocacy. I talked about that a bit. It's the number one issue, I would say, is that when we look at our data, and you have some data in this binder that shows to you the homeless population is either low income or no income, and we're going to need to address that. And so, you know, really I'll just leave this slide on here. You have a document in section one. Actually, it's section 2C. Section 2C, the integrated services summary, shows you the board's strategic budget priorities related to many of the items that are in this presentation, related to correctional reform, reentry, and housing. And so I will stop there and on the presentation and mention to you some of the things that, as I said early on in the presentation, income and housing are solutions to homelessness. Housing, with the board recently passing the Housing Trust Fund, I look around to the membership of the commission, and I see that we need our cities to sign up to the Housing Trust Fund. I don't expect all 34 to sign up, but we do want as many cities as possible to sign up onto that trust fund. We have the landlord incentive program that United Way is working on, and, you know, at a very positive meeting last week to bring landlords in, to bring units on. So it's not just about building housing. We're not going to build our way out of this. We also need to address the existing housing stock, motel conversions, renovations. There's a ton of work going on housing, but, you know, I would seek the leadership of everyone around the table on developing an initiative around, you know, what are the specific components that you all touch on related to housing. And then on income.
Can you pause for a moment, yeah. Susan? Commissioner Domer?
Oh, I was just going to say, last night the city of Fullerton approved the Orange County Housing Trust, so I believe we're the first city to opt into it. And also thanks to Supervisor Chafee for, after a long day, coming and speaking on behalf of the board and encouraging the council. So it was a good vote.
Excellent. Thank you. Continue, please.
Thank you very much. On the income component, we have an approved contract with Chrysalis. I don't know how much you all are aware of Chrysalis, but they are currently operating in the city of Anaheim, and they operate kind of like a temp agency for homeless people, where, you know, we can refer people in to Chrysalis, and then they have contracts either with government or private sector businesses to hire people that get screened through the temp agency. And so I bring that forward as a model, that we brought that into the county. It's a great model. It's less than a year in development. And what I'm hearing so far is that cities around the county are wanting to contract with Chrysalis to expand that effort. And so I bring that to you as, you know, one component. The other component, Goodwill, right?
Okay, so.
Employment Works.
So you have, you moved on now to your three priorities? Is that what we're talking about?
So I did housing and income.
Right, I just wanted to highlight. That's what Susan has moved on to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first is housing and now is income,
mm-hmm.
economics. And then the third priority?
The third one is, and I was just talking to Commissioner Black before the meeting, we've had some work with the fire authority and with the courtyard on looking at the calls for service, as I mentioned earlier, EMS calls at the courtyard. And so looking at high utilizers, and I think we should study that a bit, because from the police department, from the sheriff department, and the fire authority, there's a nexus of, you know, if you all took up the top 10, and if we were to address their needs as proactively as possible, with, you know, again, limited resources, we don't have the full system built out, but with the system we do have, could we better address the people that are most vulnerable, that are highest utilizers of our system, and would they be the same people, potentially? And so our work, I'm hopeful, Mr. Black, that our numbers are going down because of our intentional dialogue, but I'd like to see more of that. And so, you know, I kind of bring that to this group because you all have a stake in, you know, our discussion with Mr. Palmer last time talking about substance abuse. That's the recidivism in the jails as well, and looking at law enforcement. So there's a nexus there with mental health and substance abuse, the two things that we talk about so frequently. But looking across these five sectors, if we were to address the high utilizers, I think we'd see a broader impact for our collective efforts. So those are the three things that I'd like to present to you and, you know, certainly get feedback from the commission on where you see that being and setting goals around those things if that's what you decide to do.
Thank you,
Thank
Susan.
You.
Very thorough report. Good work. Thank you. Commissioner Black.
Yeah, I would like to mention, if you look in, what section am I in here? I'm in section 3B. Ms. Price has given us some courtyard numbers. If you look at that little bottom valley there, February through June of 18, that was, I believe that was a direct correlation to a meeting that we had with Ms. Price and the folks that work at the courtyard. And what we did is we said, let's take a look at, we don't really have high utilizer defined yet, but we do know that we can take 10 names that appear most frequently on our patient care reports. We got together with the staff at the courtyard and they identified 10 people that seemed to call 911 most frequently. And as you would imagine, they were within a name or two of the same list. And we targeted those folks to get them into the system for help instead of using the 911 system as an access point. And that correlates directly to that lowest valley that we saw for run response at the courtyard. And I think that's a good model that Ms. Price is referring to in terms of targeting specific high utilizers and getting them into a more permanent system of care. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So with the three recommended priorities from Susan, I open it up to the commission. Just to start the conversation, my first initial reaction to the priorities were they seem to be kind of step two, three, and maybe later in terms of the things that we faced, the issues that we face now. Oh, I'm sorry, did you ring in earlier?
I'll add something after you're done.
Yeah. So I'm stuck at the question of, do we have enough shelters? How do we address some of the concerns of that we create enough flow through the system of care, right, to get people to move on to the next phase? Housing and with the Housing Trust, all of that's great, but that's, to me, that's a year or two down the road. Job training, again, that requires that people have to be ready and have already gotten a lot of services already. And then reducing the rate of utilization and recidivism, that's good, but again, that takes time. In the meantime, we still have, right, by the time the point in time numbers come out, we will see most likely some kind of increase in the number. So then is the system countywide ready to help address that and all of the issues that flow thereby? So that's just kind of my first initial thought, okay? Commissioner Fable.
Thank you, Commissioner Doe. I too want to thank Susan and your staff for putting this together. Obviously a lot of work and tremendously valuable and helpful, so thank you for that. And I think it does set context for us well. What I was thinking about asking is, I hate to put Commissioner Sue Parks on the on the spot, but the United to End Homeless has been going on for a year now, and you and your colleagues, many of whom are on this commission and here present today, have been thinking about this for a long time now. So I think it would be helpful to hear what United for Ending Homelessness has done, because what I'm trying to do as a commissioner on this commission is to prioritize and to put at the highest level. So the more information, the better, as we get to the priorities. And so if it is appropriate, I would love to hear what Commissioner Parks so state as to where that year of work with some of the brightest minds in this community and some of the most committed individuals in this community have come to this point, and how that information can help inform this commission.
Thank you, Rick. I'm happy to share a bit. We had, as you know, 1 year anniversary. As we started off, one of the things that our commitment was, we didn't want to recreate things that were going well. We wanted to understand where we felt that there were gaps. And so we came out with four goals in terms of what we need to look at. First was, how could we help the public awareness, make more folks aware of the homelessness issue and that there are solutions that have worked in maybe other communities, and that solutions that are going on now. We wanted to take the myths away, so we used the UCI cost study that we commissioned a couple of years ago with Jamboree to try to get more facts out. So we've been doing multiple Homelessness 101 courses around the county with classes and trying to encourage everybody to be more educated on it. So we, again, are talking from facts and not myths. So things like Susan was talking about, and again, Susan, thank you for this, all of this data, but the idea that the high utilization is costing the county a lot, that came out in the cost study, and that most of the people that are homeless have lived here in Orange County for at least 10 years, have had something that triggered their homelessness in the first place, and that being a loss of a job and not being able to keep up with their rent or mortgage and having some disruption in their life that might have driven them to a behavior issue. And again, we keep trying to educate people that it might not be the reason that they ended up on the streets is a addiction or a mental illness, but anybody living in a challenged condition over a period of time might resort to other ways to mask what's going on. So we've done a lot of education, and that was the first step. And part of that is all because we want to get the 2,700 units built, and we want the citizens in every city to be positive about having permanent supportive housing in their communities. And so that has been a big effort. So we've been doing a lot of educational efforts. We launched our public awareness campaign in November, so that was a huge effort for us in terms of trying to get more word out. And if you've seen the bus banners and everything, the bus shelters, homeless, crossing out the less, and making sure that everybody knows the solution to homeless is a home. So public awareness, we are beefing that up right now to get more out. And again, what we're trying to do is help every city create, if we could, 50 to 100 housing champions that can be positive people in their community, so there's positive voices about the solution. So that public awareness has been number one, and we feel like that was something that we could help with, and a lot of our team split up and focused on public awareness. And it's been going on at companies and all sorts of different places. The second thing was this idea of standardization on a landlord incentive program. And so we learned in other communities that scattered site housing, which has been going on here and been successful, but that we could add an element of standardization. So we were so delighted to have $250,000 from the county here to support a landlord assurance fund. We work with one private landlord to help create the pilot and to learn the system backwards and forward, what it takes to have somebody housed and how does that all work. And some of the folks said there are now 11 in those units that he made available for the initial step of the pilot. And that's been going really well. And so we then worked with other communities around the country. We found landlord incentive programs that had worked well. And then we worked with Paul Hastings, helped us design a document for landlords to participate in a landlord incentive program with a standardized level of service so that you could get double deposits if you needed to, that we would hope pay holding fees, that there would be even from our philanthropic side, furniture and moving costs, and there's a 24-hour hotline, and try to take all the fears away from a landlord to get involved. So we launched that last week, or we announced that last week to a group of landlords to try to get more landlords engaged. And we had the one that had been participating in the pilot speak from a landlord's perspective of what that experience has been like and the learning. So a very positive meeting. It was just last week. We're finalizing, and we've been talking to the CAA and the ACCOC about how do we get part of their board meetings. I think those are coming up in May, so we can take that big. And with a goal of could we add 100 more units into the system over the next few months. So that was a very specific goal we threw out to that community, and we've heard that people are stepping up. But again, that was last Wednesday. So that and created that standard. And we've talked as well as could we help create a standard level of care, is that when somebody is a landlord especially, what does that care look like in the case management for the individual? And could we work with our service provider network to ensure that there is some level of standard of care? So we brought together, I think it's 23 service providers, to have that discussion, and we're working through that as well. So the two things, that the public awareness, scattered site housing, create a standard, and getting a landlord program widespread, we're just launching that. So give whatever support we can to the cities to help encourage builds. And then we're waiting for the data, I think like all of us are. So I think our leadership would love to look at how do we look at segments. So veterans, like how could we partner together to end veterans? I think they love the idea of looking at the high utilization. I think that there's a opportunity that they're excited about maybe on seniors or women, or what are the different segments and breaking those up into steps into again, chunks that we can start saying, you know, let's help different groups and understand what are the biggest gaps in those particular populations and how can we help the county, the commission with specific segments and getting more people engaged in the community to want to do the right thing. And then the fourth thing we've been working on is like where is the role of philanthropy in terms of helping supplement what's going on. And we know that there might be needs for more case management and care management and simple life things that philanthropy can provide that we're energizing the philanthropic community to get more involved around. So those are the four areas where we're at, public awareness and the scattered site being the ones that we've been focused most on. And I think those are off to a good start. We'd always love to do more. Is that Commissioner Affable?
Well, what I would say is so thank you for that and very venerable and appropriate goals. I would call those tactics. rather than goals. So I think our priorities, Mr. Chairman, are about setting categories of just those strategies and priorities. I would say each one of these is in the housing bucket. So Susan's priorities were housing, income economics, and focusing on high utilizers. Most of the United for Ending Homelessness are tactics, really good ones, and by the way, a lot of it down the line already, in the big area priority of housing. There's obviously probably 10, 20, 50 additional things that need to be done in those categories as well. But so that's very helpful and helps me to, so now how do we take that work and put it into the priorities that we as a commission will be leading, some of it in the private sector, some of it in the public sector, some of it in many other places. Thank you.
Sheriff Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to, a couple of comments. First comment to compliment to Susan and your team. That's a very, it's a great summary, and I'm looking forward to seeing some of the data that's in the report. Last February, just past February, we issued a report on homeless deaths in Orange County, and it's in the binder for you to review. Some of them may have already seen it. I do want to point out the number that Susan put in the report is accurate, but it may be a little misleading. If you look at those who are experiencing homelessness who become one of our cases, if you control for the natural deaths, those are people who die from natural causes, whether they were homeless or in home, as control for that number, one out of two are die as a result of overdose, accidental overdose. That's a much larger number than we are probably looking at. And I just want to point that out, not only for the board, but for the audience. The Stepping Up initiative is referenced. It is being, as you know, Mr. Chair, being reviewed right now. It's being tweaked where necessary to make it more current. Just based on the last year, things have changed in the county regarding mental health, which I think is also moving it forward. That has a nexus back to our custody operations within our jails. And that's important because some numbers that aren't in this, I believe, but I think important to know, in the first 6 months of 2018, we had approximately one in three of our bookings in the jail were people who are identified as homeless. So we're looking at opportunities to intervene appropriately, and I can't think of a better audience to have than a captive audience where we can saturate with services while in our custody and care. 40% of those have suffered from mental illness as well, and we are changing the operations and programs of our jail, becoming forth soon in a report to the board, and how we're using those opportunities to treat people for behavioral health issues and also substance abuse. If you remember, when the riverbed was being addressed, we took 16,000 needles off the riverbed. There's a high population that we know are dying while homeless from overdose and also coming to our jail. And I'll agree with Chief Black that when you look at high utilizers of services, those are probably the same names that we're seeing coming through our jails as well. So I'm going to work on a program within our jails to complement what we're doing in, on the street to focus on integration while in our custody to make sure they get tied to services, hopefully shelter or some other services upon release, rather than cycling them through and becoming returning back to the homeless population. I think that might be one of the greatest opportunities of the high utilizers of services to get them while we have them in a controlled environment, to get them to help either mental health or substance abuse treatment while in our custody, and then hopefully through service provisions while tying them up with an upcoming ending date while we know they're leaving, to get them connected with services before they exit our jails into the street. If we let them out the back door and then hope they're going to find their way to services, it's too late. They'll return to homelessness. I point that out as probably falls in the high utilizers priority, number three. But we sometimes are focused on those who are currently homeless in the community, not realizing we have this large segment who are temporarily being housed but not appropriately housed within the jails to tie them to services upon release.
Commissioner Palmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we talk about those three high-priority planks, I'd suggest we add a fourth, which is health, both physical and mental. I've had an opportunity over the last week to spend about 100 hours in a low barrier shelter and understanding hands-on what some of the needs are. And health, both on the physical side and the mental health side, are absolutely huge. Commissioner Parks had mentioned, you know, care coordination, case management. This is what causes the biggest challenge for a lot of workers that are out there in the field working with this population. Probably many of you have had an opportunity to read the 106-page document that the ACLU put together. And thank you for putting together, especially page 11 here, the main system gaps identified. I think that's a wonderful snapshot of where the needs are. But I agree with the chairman that we need to really prioritize those gaps and identify both the demand and capacity. We now have a point-in-time count that's going to come out. We should probably immediately map what resources center around some of the concentrations of those homeless, and then look at how we're going to create that initial capacity. It's almost a taking a look at the continuum of care for the homeless on the streets and through the low barrier shelters and what that will look like. Because the stabilization, as we've heard with the number of calls for emergency fire, the number of calls and the number of people that are actually in our jails, it's so significant that without some of these other tools and without this commission understanding both what the capacity is out there currently and what the demand is, it would be hard to really tackle those things. And so I agree with the chairman that we really need to prioritize those items.
Thank you. If I can refer you to slide number three, it's the culmination of a very big effort at the county to wrap our arms around all of the different entities that exist that do some of the work that touch on what we work on here. You just look at the number of the councils and commissions, committee. When Sheriff Barnes mentioned the Stepping Up Initiative, probably many of you don't know what that is an initiative started by the Sheriff Department, Sheriff Hutchins, and the Board of Supervisors, at the time Supervisor Spitzer, to look at our mental health system in a correctional setting. But the mission is not just to deal with mental health while they are incarcerated, but how do we prevent the same mental health inmates from cycling back into custody. And so that also touches on intervention and early prevention type of measures. So in looking at that, it requires us to then take an inventory of all of the different ways that we can touch those the individuals. And so when I look at this chart, number three, I see our work here as touching on that same kind of system of care. And I would really invite you all to look at the integrated services from a strategic financial plan 2C that Susan mentioned earlier. That's a good starting point because that will tell you where we are focusing on some of the major components on mental health and the reentry program. If you look at the numbers where 1/3 of the jail population is homeless and 40% mental health, that's a big component of the issues that we're dealing with here. So in many ways, because we haven't had a chance to really get a chance to discuss what data you have and perhaps where the data plug into what we do. I think we can start the discussion today, but it would probably be more beneficial for you all to review that. And if necessary, to have the county brief you individually or in small groups what the integrated services really is all about. Because Integrated services is the result of the Stepping Up initiative, right? That the Stepping Up initiative led to the recommendations that led to the integrated service system that we created at the County of Orange. So that's a good starting point. Then I think after that is when we can really in earnest talk about the possible subcommittees that we can form. Having said that, I know that Ms. Price also shared with me her thinking that she would prefer actually for us all to discuss the priorities and then tackle each priority as a group, as a whole, as opposed to in a subcommittee setting, because she believes that each of us will have a unique perspective and focus that will help to flesh out those priorities more completely if we were to do it as a body as opposed to in a subcommittee structure. So I also want to throw that out too. Sheriff Barnes, do you agree that when we took the same approach with the Stepping Up initiative with the OCC, JCC, the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, and I think by taking a step back and taking an inventory, it allows us to be more focused moving forward. And I would suggest we do the same thing here.
I do agree with that. Looking historically, unless there's some, first of all, topic matter experts or subject matter experts, with the support and provisions to accomplish subcommittee goals and objectives, I do agree that I think it's better to keep the dialogue and discussion at the commission level and not to water it down. I can't think of a better term. But when you start to take away from the core of the group, it's sometimes subjected to a smaller group and what their experiences are. I would recommend that on some of these topics that are, I think, looking at, I'm not trying to give Susan more work, but I know she's not busy, for maybe to give her the direction as a commission and what we're looking for. I think she's the best person and the probably subject matter expert. I know there are others here to go forth and with the appropriate direction from the commission to gather the appropriate data and bring it back, as she did in this binder, additional information. And if she needs anybody's help on the commission, I don't think anybody will turn her down if she seeks data, programs, whatever it might be that are currently available. And I do agree, Mr. Chair, when you look at what drove the Stepping Up initiative is really a map that's really being emulated, I think, through Susan's efforts with the continuum of care. But as we've discussed in other areas and on the commission, Orange County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, all these issues, all these social issues we're dealing with are connected, and we're dealing with them in some areas disparately when they are very much associated with this topic of homeless. If you look at substance abuse, there is a connection to those who are experiencing homelessness. The financial impacts on families or income related has that as well. Mental health very obviously has an impact on the homeless population. If we deal with those issues independently, we're missing the greater opportunity of looking at it collectively and how we can benefit and intervene with the specific homeless population. So all of these kind of overlay, I think, in some areas. And I do agree that we need to look at this as one commission and give appropriate direction in addressing them. But keep in mind that there's a lot of things currently going on in the county and some in cities and some private. It's collecting all those and bringing them center and connecting them with the system of care appropriately, because we can probably get more bang for our buck as this commission in dealing with other issues that are not identified specifically as homeless, but we know are connected to the homeless population, that we could probably get more better outcomes if we look at the other issues that are going on, other systems that are in place, and bring them center.
Thank you, Sheriff. I agree. Today, what I think we should do with the last 25 minutes that we have is to maybe brainstorm on priorities. And we know that just merely brainstorming. And I would invite you to review. Oh, I'm sorry. To review the integrated services strategic plan that I mentioned earlier, And I would really invite you to get a briefing as well from Susan and the county staff on integrated services, but also on the information that you have here, just so that we you know what's being done already out there in order to then think ahead about where we can make a difference, things that we can focus on to help make the system even more efficient. Vice Chair, yeah?
I just offer a little bit of a perspective. When the more I see and the more I read, the more it tells me that I probably only know 10% of the programs that are out there, and I'm pretty active. So that tells me that lots of great things are happening. But I think we're operating, to borrow a term that I think Marshall came up with one day on the mental health side, I think we're operating kind of silos of excellence. Meaning that there's a fabulous program over here dealing with this issue, and a fabulous program dealing with that issue, and a fabulous facility over here, and a fabulous facility over there. And yet the breakthrough thoughts come when, and I'll use you, Sheriff, when you say, my job is not just to incarcerate, my job is to find out why I keep incarcerating. And if I have to deal with a mental health issue in order to reduce incarceration, I'm going to do that. I'm going to take that step. So what leap did you make? You made the leap from running a facility, doing it well, I do a great job at the jail, to looking at the person. And I think that's maybe, in my mind, what could help us focus on what we should be doing. Can we design a system that brings all these silos of excellence together? I think integration or service system is a great start. I will study that. And then determine what financial resources do we need in order to flip this to an individual basis. So I see this happening in, for example, Hoke Hospital, where I sit on the board. We treat patients. You break your arm, we're going to fix it. But typically, you have a variety of conditions that have you coming back more and more. And until we focus on the patient and not the disease, we keep seeing the patient. And so whole person care has been the coinage of how we should think and behave and operate for purposes of getting to a comprehensive solution. So in my mind, I want to put out there, could we not have some discussion within this commission about how to be people-centric, as opposed to program-centric, as opposed to facility-centric. Yeah, I want 2,700 units of permanent supportive housing. I've been an advocate and an activist on it. But I really want something that deals with the person. That, to me, feels more satisfying for what our work could, should be. So I was kind of struggling with this, how to articulate it, and then I came across, for a variety of other reasons, a program that Cal Optima will be engaging in at some point called Health Home. It's sort of the successor to Whole Person Care. I heard this morning Susan say Whole Person Care has been fabulous. Well, Whole Person Care, I think, is going out of business. It's only got a year or so left. The successor, if I've got this right, is Health Home. And so as we look at that, the philosophy behind all that is to say, let's create flexibility to deal with the individual, as opposed to more programs to deal with individual problems that that person may have. And I kind of feel like that's where we need to get to. When we get to intensive case management, that's what that is. You just decided to focus on 10 human beings, and you got their names, and you went after it. You said, whatever it takes, because the system's better off and the individual's better off. Well, rather than have that just be 10, what does it take to have a system that deals with everyone who's homeless? And I think the only way we get at that is through focusing on the individual. and setting the system up that way. There are programs and fundings out there to do it. It's philosophically where Medi-Cal is going. It's where Cal Optima should be going, I would hope, in some of their programming. We could put that integrated into your integrated services plan. But out of that, we treat these people to say, what does it take? What we found in our work on mental health is we have a population of people who have significant mental health issues. They also have, a lot of them, addiction issues. Sometimes the addiction created one, or sometimes the mental health issue created the other. Are we going to bifurcate those services, or are we going to deal with the individual? So I think if we could get ourselves philosophically to that point, I think it might guide our work. So I kind of put that out there. It's a little loose, but I wanted to sort of challenge us to think about it a little bit. Thank you.
Before I call on you, the Commissioner Tuan, let me give you an update. That is something that we have been advocating for at both the federal and state level, which is the 1115 waiver with CMS to allow mental health and housing to be made a part of Medicaid services. As you know, there's a prohibition on the Medicaid for the use of Medicaid dollars for any of those two functions. But that's in the old days where we used to operate in silos, where physical health, mental health, and housing are not seen as part of an integrated treatment course that you've mentioned, Dan. We are hoping, in fact, when I was up in Sacramento the last 2 days, I advocated for the governor to support a statewide pilot program under the 1115 waiver for the whole state of California for a 5-year pilot program to do exactly this, to allow us to incorporate kind of recuperative care type of model, whole person care model into homeless care. So that is a good direction, but until we get that, that's a pretty big ask coming, you know, from CMS. That's easily a year or 2 year process. So we will continue to work at it, but I don't know, in the meantime, we operate within what we can do. I also want to say that I sit on the board for Cal Optima, and today, later this afternoon, we will have a homeless ad hoc meeting. But so far, I'm not optimistic. I don't see vision coming out of Cal Optima that they are a part of the physical health system. I really don't see it. I think the focus is still on are people members of Cal Optima? And if so, we have this panoply of services. But if they are not in our system, and as we know, most of the homeless, by definition, they qualify for Cal Optima. They just haven't gone through the administrative process to be members. That doesn't mean that Cal Optima doesn't have that responsibility to that population. It's going to take a change of attitude for Cal Optima to get there, and I hope eventually we'll get there, but the pace is too slow. So I want us to know that Cal Optima eventually may be part of the system in some way. I hope they will be more robust. I haven't seen it so far, so don't count on that as a big piece that you can count on yet. Commissioner Tuan.
Just to tag on to what Commissioner Young said with the focus on individuals, I think we are looking at this from a system perspective, which we should be. But one thing that would help me tackle some of these issues is to look at scenarios where, you know, as we say, the tributaries that feed into the bigger lake. Is someone that's coming out of the coming out of jail or whatever, however they're ending on the street, I would like to see what services are available to them from their perspective that they can go to, and then what hurdles are they encountering. And so it's almost sort of a test of our system to be able to say, where are the hurdles and the roadblocks? At that point, then we can really focus and say, and that, I think that should be the job of the commission as a whole, is to remove some of those barriers or to fix whatever is broken in that way. And so I wholeheartedly agree that we need to look at it from the perspective of the individual. And that maybe that will allow us to be able to provide a little more focus on some of the issues that we need to tackle as a group.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I totally agree with, I think, conceptually what we're talking about. And I think if you look, if you take any one individual, either high utilizer or somebody who's temporarily homeless, it would be kind of, I think, complementing what Commissioner Young said. I would wonder how many opportunities that individual had where people in the systems touched them along the way through all these systems. It's kind of like navigating or listing at sea where they're not even on a tributary river, they're just floating. And all the opportunities that we have either through law enforcement, outreach, healthcare, in custody, out of custody, private sector, public sector, I think we'd be amazed at if we actually tracked that number to see how many times the opportunities through all these systems to intervene occurred, maybe successfully, maybe not, maybe on the part of the individual wasn't the right time. You can't ever have any one person be representative of the whole. But this is not, put a different way, we're looking at this as it's a complicated problem. We put a system together and it will work. It's not like, you know, baking a cake, which could be complicated the first time, and then over time you can do it without a recipe. This is a complex problem. It's based on each individual, that individual's needs, how unique they are, co-occurring issues that we face. And I agree that if we have a cookie-cutter approach, that we put together a system and it should work, we'll hit some, we'll miss a lot in doing that. So how we then tie all these together is the most important part of how we resolve this issue. And I know I don't disagree with you about Cal Optima, but then it begs the question, how do we then as a commission find ways to connect people to Cal Optima so that they can't say they're not part of the group? And I know that there's an effort going on with that, but the system, there are opportunities that exist and they're all unique to the individual, and I agree with Commissioner Young. But we have to have a system, a web wide enough to catch everybody and then connect them with whatever opportunity might present at that time, wherever they are, either homeless, in custody, even before they become homeless, to have those triggers that before they walk, they get entered into the homeless population, we have some ways to intervene and prevent people from becoming homeless in the first place and have a stopgap. Or else these numbers are just going to keep on either rising or it's a one-for-one exchange. And I don't think anybody on this commission is going to be satisfied with that.
I mean, we do have some pieces in place already, right? We're building out the HMIS system where there's an inventory of resource that is updated in real life, where at any given time, people can find out where the beds are available, what resources are available. We have the integrated services, integrated data initiative at the county, where hospitals can share information against life speed whenever the homeless are admitted. So that way, their treatment is informed to any other subsequent provider. We do have on the correctional side, we're working on that with OCC, JCC. And in terms of out in the field, we have the mobile health team that Cal Optima is offering. They're thinking about it, they're proposing it, hasn't really happened yet, no contracts in place. But whenever it happens, ideally they go out with the blue shirt teams, right? That's the outreach and engagement team from the healthcare agency. So we do have these pieces in place. The challenge is how do we make them more robust and work together? And this is where hopefully this commission will then highlight the need to complete the HMIS system more. Maybe, and I'm using the term 211 because that is an actual agency, an entity, but a 211 type of service that is more robust, that is more integrated. Right now, it's more of a 411 informational type of thing, as opposed to be a true referral type of service. Okay, the Tech Suite, that is the innovation program for mental health that we use our MHSA money for, to provide peer counseling, referral services, a list of resource for people with mental health issues. How do we make that? How do we're working with other counties to build that system up. So that's one more piece. So these are all disparate pieces that we have all going. And I'm hoping that once you read through all of this and understand what we have out there, that we can then sit together and then come up with how do we focus on what area to make the most impact and get the address the immediate needs first before we go out and do longer term plans. So, and I tell you what I just described is really just a few of the things that are out there that we have already started. Even for me, I can't keep them straight. There's so many out there. So I can only imagine how much it would take for you to sit down to really think about it and then be, you know, briefed by all of us as to what we are doing because we live with this 24/7. You have a job to do. So it's our job to bring you up to a point where we can take advantage of your expertise and your insight.
Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you. I'd like to go back to the priorities, and especially Ms. Price brought up the high utilizers, because as we talk about, we're talking about trying to develop what I think is a whole system that's going to work for everybody. But if we focus on, take a look at the high utilizers, they're the ones that they're continuously in the system, whether it be for a variety of issues. If we were to take a look at them, study them for a period and see why aren't they being successful? What is, and it may fall into a stopgap, or it may be something that we're overlooking, but if we're looking at why isn't it working? Because this, again, the high utilizers are a smaller group. It's a more manageable or control group, for lack of a better term, that may help us say, why are these individuals not succeeding? That may help us focus more on a more holistic program or direction for the board that may save us, you know, extra work, or it may just help refine some of these programs that we have, so we don't have one person that goes in for a drug addiction, but he's also got a mental health issue. But we only deal with drug addiction; you have to go here for mental health. So maybe doing, and again, I don't know what that looks like, but some sort of research on that.
Commissioner Moncrief?
I like the talk on the personal, so thanks, Mr. Young, for centering us on that. It seems to have resonated with some others. As interesting as that came up, I was thinking through an example of where I've seen this happen, where a system starts to center around a person. And I actually had the very good fortune of working with Dr. Afable when he transformed a health system. So hospitals and health systems have historically run around services and cost centers. And so I go in for an illness, and I get sent to this service, and then something else emerges, and I get sent over to that service. But the whole environment is structured around the services and the cost centers for tracking. And Dr. Afable came in and said, wait a minute, we're wanting better outcomes. The patient is at the center of getting those outcomes. And restructured the entire thing, just like Mr. Young called out, not around services, but around patients. At the hospital level, it's called an institute. And so you have a heart and vascular institute, or you have a neurosciences institute, or you have a women's institute. And so for individual people that have common challenges, all of the care providers that might be participants in getting them their needs met are coordinated around that disease state or that organ. And we started watching better patient experience, better provider satisfaction,
and better outcomes, and actually at a lower cost. And then the second area I've seen that start to happen, and we have a long way to go still to improve this, but is in the mental health area with Be Well. And when we started Be Well, which is 2 years ago, when we started that, the loudest folks in the room were mental health people like me, and we were looking at the entire thing around treatment, inpatient treatment, outpatient treatment, primary care treatment. And then we were challenged by non-mental health people to come in and hold on a second, let's structure this around results. We need better crisis care, we need better upstream care, we need better back-end treatment, and so the results that we wanted to see for the individuals that were moving through that system. So I think it's possible to get where we're going, and Supervisor Doe, I agree completely. We have so many good things going on right now. It's not vacant. It's just a matter of putting the structure in place that facilitates those things coming together. So I'm eager to start to take some of the slide deck that we got today and start to arrange that. And how do we structure all of these pieces so that there's some intentional coordination from one to the other? And really appreciate your comments on 211, because for any of that to work, at the center of that needs to be a comprehensive, I call it a navigation hub, but that needs to include case management and all of those different elements that we're talking. That's the center gear through which the justice gear spins, the mental health gear spin, the healthcare gear spins. And then we can start addressing the symptom that is homelessness.
All right, thank you. Sheriff Barnes.
Just to perhaps I'll make a recommendation that for the next meeting, complementing some of the other comments, we have some people who are actually on the front line intervening with these people, come in and present to us what their observations are, although they may not be, they may be qualitative, not quantitative, but I believe we're trying to do the right thing by presenting solutions, but until we hear what the barriers and challenges are that are being experienced by the frontline individuals, I'm not sure we can really grasp wholly how those solutions may be put in place. So we have, Chief Gasol and I both have a homeless outreach teams in our departments. I know we work with healthcare agency and others. Dylan Wright, I believe, is here in the audience. Yes. If we could ask the people, actually the boots on the ground who are doing the outreach and intervention, to come back and maybe share with us what they see the successes and also what the barriers or challenges are with the population we're trying to serve, might help us guide some of our recommendations going forward. I'd be willing to offer up our personnel to do that.
When I think of the discussion between system versus the person, the personal care, I struggle to kind of define what is the, how do we get to the personalized care without first addressing the system, right? Addressing how do we establish the system and what deficiency that we may have in the system. Because we would need to reach out, right, to get services from the system in order to get, to customize that care. When I think back to, like, say, our effort with the homeless on the riverbed, none of that could have happened, the assessment and the treatment and the integration of those patients, of the clients, could have happened if we didn't have a very robust outreach and engagement team. That's the system, right? The pieces that we have mentioned earlier with the integrated data integration, tech suite, 211, again, I'm using that as a concept, not, yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, these things are system pieces, and they have to be in place, and they have to be robust, they have to be functioning right for us to then be able to come up with how do we, you know,
work that service in a way that can service the individuals better. So when I still go back to that we need to look at what we have and what do we need to build it up to the point where it becomes a functioning system, then that's when we can focus on the individual. Without that, there really is no way for us to get the pieces that we need in order to put the four or five providers in the same place, because we don't have them. Commissioner Parks.
Thank you, Chairman. The last time we were all together, we talked about veterans' homelessness, and I know we don't have the final count, but I think we talked around 245 or something as an example. So I know, and back to Commissioner Fable, is I know that what has energized some of our folks is maybe they're not their real names, but 245, like if we start knowing who those 245 are and their stories, this idea, could we tie this person approach to the segment approach as we learn what's going on, so that at the end we have something that's concrete that we've collaborated and done together, which would be ending veterans' homelessness. And I think, again, the idea that every time somebody gets into a permanent solution, that's one less person, and we could start seeing this, we would learn from the individual stories, but we could start seeing what were the roadblocks in the system. What are those two or three things? When we hear veterans have a lot of services, a lot of things offered to them, why is there still that gap in terms of people not having a home? So I guess my question is, are we still thinking along that lines about veterans' homelessness, or where is that? And is that an opportunity for us to make this real and make it more personal and have a good, solid goal that we could work on together?
Susan.
If I could speak to that, on the ending veteran homelessness strategy, we hope to bring that back to the board with the results of the homeless count in the coming weeks. And so with that, you're absolutely correct. We have a registry of homeless veterans. We know who they are. We've been working with them, some of them, for more than a year. And that's why I really appreciate the dialogue around high utilizers, because when we know who they are, we can really effectively address their needs through the system of care. And, you know, I appreciate your point, Supervisor Doe, because we don't have a fully complete and mature system of care built, but we've accomplished a tremendous amount in the last few years with the clearing of nearly 1,500 people in encampments into the system of care that we've had. And so with that, we've been tested. The system's been tested. You know, people have fallen through the cracks. People have been successfully housed. And so we've been able to kind of look at that over the course of the last 2 years. And that's why I kind of bring forward some of the examples that we have a maybe too large population that does not have income. And so we need to really focus on getting people connected to benefits so that we can house them, because without, you know, in permanent supportive housing, they have to have an income. And so we have to kind of address both of those things in tandem. And then the last thing I want to say about the data integration in our trip to Washington, D.C., really taking a look at some of the legislative issues like HIPAA for sharing of medical information and diagnosis on mental health, not jiving and coinciding with 42 CFR, which covers substance abuse. And we're dealing with the same person, but we cannot address the mental health and the substance abuse teams talking to each other for care coordination. And so the supervisors are well aware of that. We've been advocating at both the state and the federal level to break down some of those legislative, you know, issues that would really, you know, make our system more successful. And so, you know, the data integration piece is key. We've got multiple data systems. For many reasons, they can't or don't talk to each other. And so we're also working on that. And I think that will elevate our efforts to address a person's navigation through the system. And then the last thing I'll say is the regional service planning areas has allowed our cities to begin to collaborate and work together on the individual homeless populations that are in their cities, to move them from the streets and the outreach into the shelter system through coordinated entry, pull them out of the shelter and into the permanent supportive housing that's available. So that's a linear progression. Not everyone follows a linear path, as we've heard around the table. It's difficult to draw a linear chart because people are coming in and out of the system in such different, overpasses, right? The on-ramps and the off-ramps are different for every single person. But the themes and the barriers are known through our system as we've been tested in the last 2 years, successful and, looking at the gaps. And that's what we're trying to provide here and in an ongoing manner. This is a journey, not a destination. So look forward to working on this with all of you.
Susan, you touch on something really critical. We work here to create a system, things that are within our control. But the HIPAA, SAMHSA, right, the confidentiality thing, and then the 1115 waiver, these are things that are beyond our control that really dictates what system we can build. We can build a HMIS system or data integration all we want, or 211, but if they can't communicate, we can't convey the information that we need, we can't get to the point where we can customize services. So this is where there are things that under that kind of the common thread among all of the things that we do, that can we accomplish what we can accomplish given the current restrictions that we operate under. And this is where once we know that's an issue, we can reach out, use our contacts and through our own avenue to advocate for those changes. Because right now, even at the county, we can't communicate between county departments. Think about it. How do you create a system of care when different departments from the county can't even talk to each other, can't convey the same information, much less to nonprofits and everybody else? So, Sheriff Barnes.
I was just going to add, I think we're all in agreement that we have to review and build out a system. By going back to my recommendation, I think it's hard when we're in a very, we want to do the right thing, but we have to hear honest feedback to know. And I think the population, there are people entering into the system and entering and being successful through the different various systems. But until we hear from the front line on what's not working about getting people into the system, the barriers they're experiencing, and being able to take that feedback and put it into our evaluation of what the needs are, I think that's a very important piece of information that we can get from those who are on the front line, because there's a significant, I'll use the Pareto principle, I think 20% of the homeless probably use 80% of the services, and those are the high utilizers. And they're not entering the system. There are barriers there as to just keeping them out. And until we identify what those barriers are and adjust accordingly to open a door for them to get in, whether entice them in, whatever it might be, we can't really create a whole system that treats everybody, especially the very high-risk population that may never be brought here and to find out why that is. Someone's mental illness, could be drug addiction, could be just a service-resistant population. But I think those who are actually doing the work can share those probably either observations, challenges, and maybe even frustrations with this council or commission that might bring some benefit for us to in our evaluation.
Great. Thank you. Any other comments? With that, I'll close item number 6. At this point, with the discussion we have had, I would like to continue item number 5 so that we can have a chance to review the data and then maybe hear from some of the providers to get their experience. And I would also ask the commission to entertain the idea that maybe we should meet monthly until we get some of this sorted out. Because the next scheduled meeting is May 1st, and I think that's way too long for how much we have to get done. So if that's okay, I'm going to ask Susan and her staff to maybe for the next 6 months, let's schedule this as a monthly meeting for the commission and send out maybe a notice and to see people's availability, because I know we already sent out a schedule before, so there may already be plans made in reliance on the prior schedule. So let's have a meeting in April. Okay? We'll keep the May 1st one, but let's also schedule an April meeting. And we'll, at that point, take on item number 5 and continue to brainstorm and share ideas. And hopefully, it sounds like we're not going to create a subcommittee. So at that point, we may decide then the priorities, among the priorities that we have, like what issue we want to address first. And then the commission will then focus a meeting on just that issue, that priority. Okay, does that sound like a good plan to everyone? And that's how we'll proceed then. Okay, thank you. So now we move on to public comments. Any requests to speak?
Yes, we have one request to speak.
Okay, can you call the speaker at this time?
The speaker is Craig Durfee.
I spent over a year in Congress, our state, the internet on our career education, and then last September in Utah, Save the Kids at U.S. As gentlemen, as you want to different states, California, I encourage all of you to take a 15-minute break and watch the YouTube, Save the Kids at U.S. You get a clue of what happened in the rest of your paper. It's been going on internationally. It's a big problem. I'd like to bring to you the inventor of our phones called Steve Jobs. Was a low-tech parent. Jobs was a low-tech parent. I think you should take a picture of that. That's seeing where we got to go. We got to go back to better parenting, school changes in our attitude towards technology, because it's causing suicide. That's as simple as that. And if we can achieve that right now, your children report doesn't have it. Your child welfare or the federal child abuse doesn't have it in this document. And yet in 2011, the Academy of Pediatrics reported cautioned us on this issue. And in 2013, they put limitations. And in UK, they say it's linked to suicide. It's like a gram of cocaine. And UK is, and in France, or one of the countries there, banned cell phones in school, and did it in Texas. We keep dancing around. In fact, your children, your education department had a call, Greater Good News. Three teens, is it toxic? Is it hurtful, harmful? If not used correctly, yes. The antidote is normal social connection. And I say, conclusion, let's look at service dogs. They are psychiatric dogs. They're all kinds of dogs. They do a tremendous job. I have a 200-page PDF report, a professional that it works tremendously. It's a natural process that you can't duplicate in medication. I pulled a publication yesterday on Steve Quayle that our society is into a pill population because it's such a social media craziness that people don't know how to interact with each other anymore. The etiquette is gone of our days, Sheriff, where our parents taught us to sit down and have a conversation. That's what Steve Jobs does. We need to get back to that foundation to alleviate the future of your problems of homelessness. Because why? Because if you go to Quicksilver and O'Donnell in the 2017 hearing, they can't hire them. And Fraser in 2018, they're walking in a daze. And Togo Savage says they can't hire because they don't know how to use a broom. Your next wave is your children. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, comments? I go for my left. Any comments? Commissioner Steele.
I just want to congratulate Jim Palmer, our commissioner, that opening up a 50-bed semi-privacy homeless shelter with 1/3 of the price. And congratulations in Tustin.
Thank you. All right. No other comments. The meeting is hereby adjourned. The next meeting, scheduled meeting, is May 1st and 9 o'clock. But we will send out notice for our meeting. So the public, please look forward to the notice on our meeting in April. Thank you.